lots of reasons. There are many in the United States and Russia that don't want to begin talking yet about moving away from a triad structure. Both of our countries can get rid of nuclear-armed cruise missiles while maintaining our triads and really pretty robust triad systems and deterrence without these specific weapons. So there's a lot of interest in these weapons because they're actually kind of a lower hanging fruit than a lot of other alternatives and a lot of other possible steps that you could envision, especially for the United States and Russia, and for our allies that depend on our weapons as well. There are a lot of ways that it could go in terms of how you see it carrying out. You actually touched on what I think is one of the most important ones. So in my work at DOD, very frequently, because all of our staffs, they're all the S&T people. They do science and technology cooperation, and they develop technical options where they don't exist. So very frequently, for the hardest problems in the world, Syrian chemical weapons challenge being one of them, what you do is you start developing technical options and solutions, and you get your S&T people having conversations. How would you verify this? What tools would be required? What trust and political actions would be required on both? If you look at the history of many other arms control discussions, not just nuclear, beyond, and as well as other fields, a lot of times, and especially in countering WD, we make so much progress by starting with those technical expert conversations. Leave the politics out of it. You know, just as deterrence works until it doesn't, us making progress with further arms control steps, it's stuck where it is until it isn't. So I think S&T is really a powerful way, looking at those questions like verification. I think that's a really powerful way to move conversations forward and to come up with practical solutions that can make what seems infeasible very rapidly seem to be actually executable and very often to be seen as the only real option for mitigating certain threats or the best option. So again, with the Syrian chemical weapons one, we had these options, there was a diplomatic breakthrough, and it kind of comes down to, do we want to be in the middle of a regional war, or do we want to try and safely dispose of this stuff? We created a technical option, and it became the easiest, most obvious option for the time being. So you can debate everything that happened after that, but I think that it's important to start having those conversations, nuclear-armed cruise missiles, as soon as possible. There are already fora that do this, and they include weapon states and non-weapon states. They include possessors of nuclear weapons that are not part of the NPT. Some of these conversations can be so inclusive that, again, they can create some of that more open political space than what they had before. In terms of some of the specifics, there are also many, many pathways that I think it's important to be explored. You could start with U.S.-Russia dialogue. You may actually find Russia, I don't know this, if I were in their shoes, I might find it more attractive to talk about taking a global approach to ending nuclear cruise missiles over time rather than focusing on my INF treaty violations. If you could, there are many pieces of this. You have our future weapon, you have our current weapons, you have Russia's current weapons, you have some that are in violation of a treaty, and then you have other countries that may develop them, and you have France as another NATO nuclear capability. So there are a lot of pieces that created in this, either as a US-Russia, Russia-NATO, or as a full global conversation. And again, I think it's really urgent to start hammering out what would those pathways look like and who would need to be involved. And then again, what are those types of conversations and specific implementation issues that we can start now to talk about so that we essentially make these options executable and feasible, whereas they may not seem to be that way today.
Thanks very much, Christine. Mark, please.
Pavel asked a good question about, is it essential to know the numbers of nuclear arms that states have in order to deal with nuclear risks? I think there's a lot of nuclear risks that don't require that transparency about the numbers. But to really make arms control bilateral agreements of the kind that the United States and the Soviet Union and Russia have been making, numbers obviously are very important, and it's important to have verification of the numbers. For the ultimate goal of disarmament, the laudable goal that this institute is named after, you obviously would need some level of you need transparency. You need actually quite intrusive verification. And by the way, if I said by mistake that there's a ideology, that was Chatham House rules. I didn't mean it anyway. It's obviously a laudable goal of disarmament.
In terms of the transparency of the security arrangements, right? And I want to pick up a little bit on the transparency of the numbers of the nuclear weapons and nuclear materials, for that matter, and the security arrangements. There are certain